Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, former BYU defensive back and current BYU football director of recruiting, Brandon Bradley. Brandon, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with the hard-hitting stuff here because we got a lot to hit with you. Football, your upbringing, all of it, but we're going to start with facial hair. How about that?
Okay, let's do
it. You have a very nice beard. What is the origin of this beard? Because most everybody else you work with, despite for some pretty cool mustaches,
right?
No facial hair.
Well, I actually was approved to get this beard when I first started working back at BYU in 2016. But I tell everyone that it was my goal to one day be on the cover of GQ magazine. And I knew I couldn't be on there until I looked a little bit more distinguished. So I wanted to get a beard and get a little gray in it. Now that I have it, I'm just waiting on that call from GQ.
Do you think that's coming?
I hope so.
But you said you want the gray in it.
I like the gray.
Look, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, very good look.
I appreciate it.
And you used the word distinguished 100%.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for right there.
Well, look, you want to be distinguished in any career path, right? And you've taken a lot of different roles since you've been here at BYU. I want to talk about the one that you have currently, and that's the director of recruiting for BYU football. What's it like being over college football recruiting in this day and age of the transfer portal and players being able to pretty much go wherever they want to? It has changed so dramatically, certainly from when you played, but even from 2 or 3 years ago, it's constantly evolving. What is it like to be involved in that role in today's game?
If you talk to different people that's in college sports, they call it the Wild Wild West right now. And that's exactly what it is. There's always things changing. The way you recruit, the way you retain players is forever evolving. So being in this position is one of those things that you're always learning, right? It's never a time where you can get comfortable, like, okay, we got to figure it out because there's a change. So it's been fun to figure it all out. It's been frustrating at times as well. But at the end of the day, it's the nature of the beast, and it's one that I enjoy because I get the opportunity to help kids on this process as they figure out where they want to be, what they're looking for, and who they want to become. So it's been fun.
What's the overview of your responsibilities? Because you hear director of recruiting, and it sounds like, oh, well, I know what that is. There's probably a lot of stuff that people don't realize is part of your job description. So give everybody an idea of really what you do as the director of recruiting.
So from a general standpoint, it's just I manage anything that has to do with recruiting, whether it's contacting recruits, whether it's getting them here on the visit, whether it's introducing them to coaches. I'm often setting up phone calls for Kalani to talk to our recruits and their families. And when they come on visits, I help manage their visits along with Annie. What are we doing with them? What kind of activities they're going to do? Who they need to meet with while they're here on campus? So it's just anything that has to do with our recruits and making sure that they have a great experience and that they see BYU as a fit for them. That's my involvement.
So once the team identifies the players, it's their responsibility to identify the player. Do you have any role in that, in identifying players as well, or is it the coaches say, hey, this is somebody we need to go after, and that's when you take over?
So we have a director of scouting, which is Vince, and he kind of heads up the scouting. But all of us, myself, Justin Anderson as well, we all kind of scout along with some of our students. And then we also have coaches who say, hey, I went out and saw this kid, or I know this kid. Let's get some information on them. Let's watch them. Let's see what we think about them. But then once they're all in and they want to offer them a scholarship or head in that direction, that's kind of when we jump in and take over, myself and my students. And we just make sure that we are bringing those kids along through the process so that when the coaches are ready to offer them a scholarship, that they've already been introduced, that they know as much as they can about BYU. And now it's just convincing them that, hey, this is the place you need to be, and this is what we want you to be.
I hope I'm remembering the coach that said this, and I realize it's a college basketball reference, but I think it applies to what I want to ask you. I think it was Rick Pitino recently. He was like, I don't know if I would recruit a five-star athlete right now, or a kid out of high school. And he's like, just because you can't win with them, right. Which is crazy to say because that just wasn't the case a year or two ago. Because he wants to go through the transfer portal.
For sure.
So my question is, how has that changed the recruitment of high school players? How has the transfer portal changed how you view high school players from a recruiting standpoint?
Well, it's changed from the standpoint that you have to be aware of the possibility of kids leaving every year, right? From your program as well as others. The value in high school kids is still there. It's just that a lot of programs are wanting to win right now. And if I can take a kid who's already been to college, already adjusted, may have already had some playing time, that is going to help me win now, as opposed to getting a kid right out of high school that still has to go through the transition of college and adjusting to all those things. There's still a lot of value because there's a lot of good kids, obviously, that come out of high school. And you want those guys to help build your roster, right? To help build your program. It's very hard to create a program that has values and things like that if every year you're bringing in new people from the portal, right? One of the things that Kalani has done a really good job at, and all of our coaches, is that we go to the portal to get things that we need, mm-hmm. not necessarily what we want, right?
Right.
So that way we can still keep that family feel on the team and get the kids that buy into what BYU is. And not getting so caught up in, hey, let's get this kid because he's in a portal. Let's get this kid because he's in a portal. And we still have those high school kids who come in and help build that foundation. Every recruit wants to feel important. Every recruit wants to feel loved. Every recruit wants to feel wanted, you know. So those things don't change. The way you go about doing those things or showing those things may, but those things will forever be important to a recruit. So I think about my experience quite often, what I like, what I didn't like, what made me feel special, what made me feel like I was wanted, how they interacted with my mom during that process. So all those things play a part in how most of us think when we come to putting together a visit or putting together an experience or a time for a recruit to speak to a coach or whatever the case may
right.
be.
We're going to get into your recruitment coming up in just a minute or two. But this is one of the things that I love about doing this podcast is to get to know a little bit more about the guests when they were younger and their family life and where they grew up. So tell our listeners about growing up and what your childhood was like.
I had a pretty fun childhood. So I was born in New York. I lived there for about a year and a half, 2 years, then moved to a small town, Ensley, in Alabama. And it was probably about 8x8 blocks.
That is small.
It was the cool thing about it, the entire neighborhood was my family. So actually my mom's grandmother lived right across the street from my dad's grandmother. So a lot of times on Sundays we would go and visit, and I would be able to see both of my grandmothers because they live right across the street. It started as a small mining town is what it was. It had one store.
Any traffic lights?
No traffic lights. Okay. Right. No traffic lights. You got a traffic light to enter, and that was it. Had one grocery store where you went grocery shopping. You picked up your mail. They had a butcher there. It was a one-stop shop for everything that they needed anyway. So lived there for a while with one of my grandmothers, and then moved from there to Ensley, which is also in Birmingham. And then after that, I moved to Tallahassee, Florida at the age of 12. Went to middle school, high school there. Went to Lincoln High School, played football, basketball, ran track. Had the opportunity to be around a lot of outstanding athletes. And then from there, I decided to serve a mission. I served a mission in São Paulo, Brazil. while on my mission, I was convinced to come to BYU. I originally committed to go to Louisville out of high school. Mm-hmm. That in itself was a crazy story, ending up at BYU. My mother had a very, very big part of that.
And we're gonna get into that. We are certainly going to get into that.
Came to BYU, played football here, had an amazing experience, met a lot of wonderful people. I met my wife my freshman year here after an injury, a season-ending injury. Today we have four kids. We've been married for almost 18 years, and I'm the director of recruiting at BYU.
There we go. Let's go back to high school. Actually, first, you mentioned serving a mission. Did you grow up in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Did you join later, or like in your adolescence? Were you always a member of the church?
So I've been a member of the church most of my life. We got introduced to the church when I was about 5 years old. My mom had a friend that was a member and kept, you know, inviting her to listen to the missionaries to come to church. And we were religious. We went to church pretty consistently in that small town of Dulcina, mm-hmm. With my grandparents and other family members. So we had a basis of, you know, of Jesus Christ and God and all those things. We had seen the missionaries multiple times because they would come and knock on our door. And I remember as a little kid hiding and peeking out the window and wondering who they were and what they were doing at our house. And my parents telling us not to open the door, don't answer. So when my mom had the opportunity, when her friend told her about it, after a few invites, she finally allowed the missionaries to come over. And those who know my mom, she's always been a very spiritual person. And she heard the first lesson, and she was locked in from that point on and has never backtracked since. And it was amazing because both my parents smoked, they drank. It was a family thing. When we got together, that's what we did. We played cards, we played darts, you know, all yeah. those things. So to see her in that transition, how willingly she was to make that change and how quick she made it was pretty impressive.
How did the rest of the family react to that decision?
So us as kids, it was kind of like, this is different. Church is different. Our family's not there. So those are kind of our worries. But my dad was not a fan. My extended family couldn't understand why we want to go to that church. It was a common perception that it was only white people in the church, and they did not understand why we want to go to an all-white church when we had a church that it was family and everyone there was black, and it was just the beliefs were different. So it was a ton of our family that didn't understand the why behind it and the how come. So it was definitely a debate between my mom and dad quite often.
So as an athlete growing up then, we obviously know how it ended, mm-hmm. and to the levels that you were able to achieve. Was that always the plan for you? Was that always a reality for you? When did you realize that you were as good at athletics as you were? Is there a time when you're like, oh, this could be something?
I think it was probably high school. I think it was the summer going into my junior year. I've always loved sports. Basketball was my first love. And so I always played sports when I was younger, and I had, you know, people tell me, oh, you're pretty good, or you're fast, or this and that. But I had never played organized sports, right? So when we moved to Florida, I quickly learned that there were a lot of athletes there and a lot of fast athletes. And it became a normal thing. We played sports. That's what we did. We're in school, out of school, on the weekend. It was sports, sports, sports. And it was when I realized that, you know, it was something I wanted to do. My biggest reason was because I wanted to take care of my mom, mm-hmm. right? I wanted to be able to provide for my mom and, you know, give my mom the things that I felt like she deserved. And as I grew older, there was a lot of bumps in the road, and the process wasn't as easy as I had imagined it to be. So when I got to high school, my freshman year, I broke my hand, so I couldn't finish the season. My sophomore year, well, actually my freshman year as well, I did not have great grades, so my mom made me stop playing football. She would not let me play until I got my grades back. So between those two things, I didn't even finish my freshman season. My sophomore year, I took some pretty big strides on the football field, and as well as academic, because I knew if I didn't, my mom was going to play football. That was also the year I started running track. And I think that was the biggest difference for me, because as I ran track, the faster I got, the more people noticed me. So going into my junior years, when I started to get the summer going into my junior years, when I started to get interest, you know, from colleges and coaches reaching out and things like that. And I think that's when it finally hit me, like, oh, I might have a chance at actually doing this. So from that point on, it kind of, you know, turned a corner for me, and I just went forward and didn't look back.
You mentioned a few moments ago that ultimately you decided to commit to Louisville. Why Louisville?
So it was a couple of things. I took a visit to Louisville, and one of my best friends still to this day, Willie Johnson, they were willing to take us as a package deal. And it was one of the few schools that was willing to do that, and we wanted to go to school together. So we went on a visit. It was a time where Petrino was the head coach. And I really liked him. I really liked the DB coach when we went on the visit. I felt like they did a great job with recruiting my mother and allowing her to be a part of the process. And then one of the biggest things was at this point I had decided to serve a mission, but I was terrified to tell the coaches that I was going on a mission. And my mom kept telling me, hey, make sure you tell the coaches. Hey, make sure you tell the coaches. And I'm like, okay, I will. And I never did. So I went on my visit, and my mom told me, you make sure you tell the coaches while you're on the visit that you're going on your mission. And I was like, okay, I'll let them know. And I chickened out. I didn't tell them. So one last visit, they came to visit our home, and my mom told me before they got there, okay, this is your chance. You need to tell, you know.
Okay, so she knew you didn't tell them when you were there. Okay.
Yes. My mom was very direct. And if she asked me, I gave the answer. And so that was one of the first things she asked when I got home, did you tell them? And I was like, no. But my mom told me one thing that I've carried with me from that point on. Before they got there, she asked me why I was afraid to tell them. And I told them that I was worried that if I told them I was going to serve a mission, then they would take my scholarship away. And my mom told me that the Heavenly Father wouldn't punish me for doing something that he's asked me to do. And that hit home, right? And although I believe that, I really did, there was still so much fear behind sharing that.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in there, palm sweating, heart beating fast, thinking, okay, here we go, as the meeting was wrapping up. And I think my mom could see that I was still worried and concerned, and she just jumped in. She was like, hey, I don't know if Brandon told you or not, but Brandon's planning on serving a mission. And Coach Petrino had a stint at Utah. And he's like, oh, no, he didn't. He didn't tell me that. And then he looks at me, he's like, is that the plan? I was like, yeah, that's the plan. He's like, that's cool. I think I've always thought that was cool. And that's when he explained, I spent some time in Utah. We had a lot of players that serve missions. You go serve your mission. When you get back, your scholarship will be here.
How big of a relief was that?
It was huge. It almost made me feel like, what was I afraid for? But it was huge, though. It was huge. And just they were so understanding in that situation, in that time. And that was really a big relief, like you said, for me to go ahead and serve the mission that I had planned on serving.
And as you mentioned, your mission was to Brazil.
Yes.
And with the story that you just told, it would seem like you had a great experience with Coach Petrino and how willing he was to have you come back after your mission, that the scholarship would be there. You decided not to play for Louisville, but to come to BYU. Tell us the story on the change.
There's a couple things. That best friend that I mentioned earlier ended up leaving Louisville. The head coach left. The DB coach left. So it was very different from what I had prepared myself to go to. The other thing was my mission president, who was from Ogden, President Urey, he found out that I played football, and he told me when I first got into the field that his goal was to get me at BYU because that's where I should be at. And I was like, nah, not happening. Not at all. So I go through the first part of my mission. Honestly, it's probably like the last 4 to 5 months of my mission. And my mom calls. And she's like, hey, I just got a call from Bronco Mendenhall. And this is an email. At that time, we just got emails.
Right.
And she asked me if I knew who he was. I had no clue who Bronco Mendenhall was. She went on to explain. They reached out to her looking for my highlight tape from high school. And I had no clue where it was. You know, back then it was on the VHS. Each player got their own copy. I didn't know where mine was,
Yeah. You
know. But I told her, you know, you can check this place, ask, you know, these teammates that I was really close with that my mom knew. But I didn't think much of it. I was just kind of like, thanks, but no thanks. As we continued through the process, every week she emailed me and had something to do about BYU or something about Bronco or another coach. So finally, Coach Tidwell, and the story is a girl from my ward came out to go to BYU, went to the football offices and told them that she had a friend that was good at football, that was from Florida, that was on a mission, that was coming back soon, that they should check him out. And they left my mom's contact information there. Coach Tidwell reached out. It kind of started the whole process. Me and my mom went back and forth for a few months. Me telling her, no, I'm not interested. Her telling me, I think you should pray about it. My mom has been pretty accurate in most things. And the moment she told me to pray about it, I kind of already knew that that's probably where I should go, but I didn't want to.
You didn't want to let her know that she was probably right.
Yeah, I didn't want to let her know. I didn't. In my mind, there was no way I could see myself at BYU. And it was just kind of like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So finally, Bronco actually and Coach Tidwell flew out to see my mom and told her that even though they couldn't find my highlight tape, which they couldn't, he wanted to offer me a scholarship. And for my mom, that was, you know, a moving moment for her that this man who didn't know me, didn't know her, didn't know my family was willing to go out on a limb and offer me a scholarship, essentially sight unseen. He never seen me play football. He never even seen me in person. So my mom emailed me, you know, the week after, super excited. They want to offer you a scholarship. They want to offer you a scholarship. And I'm like, Mom, I already got a scholarship. You know, I'm going to Louisville. At this time, I had heard about the changes, obviously, and my friend leaving. So it was definitely already a thought in my mind, like, do I really want to go back to Louisville? But my stubbornness didn't want her to know that in the moment. So to sum it all up, we went back and forth. She finally, you know, convinced me to say a prayer. I prayed about it, and I felt like BYU was the place for me, and that's how I ended up at BYU.
So BYU did not recruit you out of high school at all?
Nope.
And why, just out of curiosity, why were you so adamant about not going to BYU first?
There was a couple of reasons. First of all, I wasn't very familiar with BYU. The only thing I knew about BYU is that Steve Young played here, who was one of my favorite players because I'm a big fan of the 49ers. Right? That was the extent. Mm-hmm. I knew it was in Utah. There was nothing about Utah that sounded appealing to me. Being from the South and having very little experience of anything different than that, in my mind, it was like, I'm going to Utah. I'm going to be the only black person there. And even though I was a member of the church, the idea of coming to such a Mormon-dominant area made me nervous. Right? I didn't feel like I would fit in. So it was like, yeah. And to top that all off, it's cold here.
Oh, yeah, and then it's cold. Yeah, from Florida to Utah is quite the change.
Right. So it was a lot of those things. I was like, there's no way. There is absolutely no way I'm going there. If I'm not going to Louisville, I go to one of the other schools that, you know, offer me a scholarship. But I'm not going to Utah, to BYU. So that was my thought
process.
That
was the reason. Well, we know you ended up here, and we're going to talk about what life was like once you got here to BYU and obviously your playing career. We're going to take a quick break. We will have more with Brandon Bradley right after this. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hey everyone, Jason Shepherd here to talk about one of our other great podcasts on BYU Radio, Her Why. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. The podcast is hosted by my colleague, Lauren McLean. She interviews coaches like Heather Olmstead, BYU athletes like basketball's Amari Whiting, and legends like soccer star Ashley Hatch. You'll hear stories of triumph, trials, and toughness. If you're a big Cougar fan, you should check out the Her Why podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest, former BYU defensive back and the director of recruiting for BYU football, Brandon Bradley. And before the break, we were talking about ultimately what swayed him to come to BYU, which was his mom and a lot of prayer. So you get to Provo, and you had some reservations about coming here in general. Once you got here, how did you feel?
It was everything I thought it would be. It wasn't as cold when I got here because I got here in April, so I hadn't experienced the cold yet. But when I got here, I didn't see many people that looked like me. Obviously, I was surrounded by tons of members of the church. So it definitely was an adjustment. Although I felt that this is where I was supposed to be, it was still difficult in that transition. I will say, being on the football team, obviously having kind of that built-in family friendship definitely helped, right? But it still was a battle initially, especially knowing that I was so far away from home. Even though I had been that way for the past 2 years, for whatever reason, this felt different, you know, and probably because I knew I wasn't on the mission and I was here, you know, for school, but it felt like, I don't know, it felt harder than it did leaving to go to Brazil on a mission. And it made it even harder because probably 3 months after being here, I blew out my knee.
Yeah.
And that was another battle in itself. So I'd be lying if I didn't question my decision after that injury. I'd be lying if I didn't question it, even if football was still the path for me at that moment. In my mind, I felt like I had done everything right. Why would I be injured? You know, I served a mission. I came back. I worked my behind off to get back in shape. To be ready to play football. And then 4 days before camp starts, I blow out my knee. And I get a call a day or two later after I got my X-ray and MRI telling me that I had torn my LCL and fractured my kneecap. And that I wasn't even going to have a season because the season hadn't even started yet. So that was hard. That was hard. And I remember calling my mom and then super sad about hearing that news and wondering why, you know.
Yeah.
And as always, and in perfect timing, my mom always had the right thing to say. And once again, she reminded me of the same thing she said to me before I went on my mission, that the Lord wouldn't punish me for doing what he asked me to do. And once again, although I believe that and knew that to be true, it was still difficult in the moment. Obviously, looking back on it, she was right in both of those instances. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate and very, very grateful to her for those words of encouragement.
So the 2006 season, which everybody remembers, you know, with back to Harlene and the Vegas Bowl win over Oregon, you missed that season with the knee injury.
Yes.
But it does allow you then to prepare yourself moving forward? How did you handle everything after the injury to ultimately become a starter on the BYU defense?
So it was, for me, it was one of those things that I kind of looked at it, the recovery part, as a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I told you guys earlier that competing, that's what I did. As friends, that's what we did. And to me, that was a competition that I had to fight through to win. And that's how I looked at it. And Brett Mortensen, who actually is our head trainer right now, was the doctor who helped me start my rehab. And I remember him telling me, like, hey, you know, these first couple of days can be hard. You know, if you need a break or you need a rest or you need us to pull back, let me know. And in my head, I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I got things to get done. I got to get right. My plan when at that point in my life was, I'm going to play 3 years of college and I'm out of here to go to the NFL. That was my goal. Also, like I mentioned earlier, that was my goal because I wanted to take care of my mother. Mm-hmm. Right. So he would tell me that. And I'm like, yeah, nah, we got to get this done because I got to be ready to play by the time camp starts next year. You know, so that's kind of how I approached it. Every chance I had the opportunity that he would allow me to push myself, I pushed myself. There was definitely some times, some tears, some frustration, some anger, and some why me. But at the end of the day, I had already told myself that no matter what, B, we going to get through this.
Yeah.
And we're going to come out and we're going to be ready to go when the time comes. So that's kind of how I moved forward. And I had a ton of support from my mom, even though she was across the country. We talked regularly. She constantly gave me, you know, pep talks and kept tabs on how things were going. And then once again, my support from my teammates here and friends and family that I had created here. So
what did it mean to you then to go through that, to have that type of mentality that I'm going to do this and then actually do it and start and play meaningful minutes for a team that needed you?
It meant a lot, like I said, because of what I wanted to accomplish, right? Obviously, playing in college had always been a goal of mine. So the fact that I had made it that far was big for me, you know. But I still had bigger goals I wanted to accomplish. And for me, the first part of my career wasn't even about the accolades or things like that. It was just, I know I need to play, and I need to play well in order to get to the NFL. And that was my thought process. The more I played, the more I experienced, the more I realized, okay, these are other things I need to do to help me get to that point. So coming off of that injury, it was just, I looked at it as part of the process at this point. That was a step I had to, hurdle I had to overcome. Now that I'm past it, what's the next thing? The next thing is now I got to get on the field to play. And that was my approach. I want to play.
Yeah.
And I had waited, you know, all this time. I served the mission. I had an injury. I had to recover. So I've been removed from the game that I love for 3.5 years. Now it's time to play. So that was my focus. I wanted to play. And it didn't matter to me how or where it was. And I remember as I started to play, it was very limited on special teams. And I had to wear a brace. And I hated it. And I asked our trainer every week, can I take it off? Can I take it off? Can I take it off? And it was always no. But once again, it was frustrating, but I knew it was part of the process.
Right.
And I had to overcome it and deal with it in a manner that allowed me to be ready to go when the time came.
How do you view those years that you played here? How do you look back on those teams, memorable moments, things like that? When you look back on those years that you played here, how do you remember it?
It was a blast, man. I look at it as an opportunity. I was able to live out one of my dreams. And I think whenever you have the opportunity, no matter how it turns out, it's special, right? And it holds a special place in your heart, in your memories, and in your life. So I look back on that moment with all of his difficulties and struggles as some of the best years of my life because I was able to live out a dream. I was able to build relationships with, you know, teammates that I still have to this day, relationships with my coaches and all the other people that I met while here at Utah, some that still work here at BYU currently. So I loved it. And whenever I have the opportunity to get with my friends and we can reminisce, it's some of the most fun times, you know, to talk about those, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it definitely wasn't always pretty. And there was a lot of tears shed, a lot of blood shed, a lot of frustration and anger during those years. But I don't think I would go back and change any of it, you know, because I think those experiences definitely impacted me and made me who I am today. And it's given me a perspective about life that I don't know if I would have been able to gain elsewhere without those experiences.
You sure there's not at least one play you'd like to change? Because I know there's one play I'd like to change.
Maybe that would end. Maybe that's one thing that I would change.
Yeah, because it needs to be changed because it was an egregious error against Utah. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think we need to tell BYU fans the play we're talking about. But obviously we're talking about the infamous fumble that wasn't a fumble. Your knee was down against Utah, but there's no replay. So you can't – there's nothing to challenge. You know, nowadays it's like, well, just challenge it.
Right.
Just clear video evidence that your knee was down before the ball was stripped.
Sure.
How honestly, still to this day, how frustrating is that play specifically? Especially because I'm sure it gets brought up to you all the time.
It does. Still, random people will come to me and say, hey, your knee was down. So it's definitely one of those things that I couldn't forget even if I wanted to. But it is definitely, it's like, it is one of those, if I could go back, I would change it.
Yes.
I would catch the ball and go down.
But see, you did go down.
You're right, I did. And the funny thing about it is a lot of people don't know, I blacked out for a second. When I got hit, I came back too, and people were scrambling for the ball. So in that moment, I didn't know if I was down or not. And I remember going to the sideline, upset. And Coach Howell asked me, he's like, hey, were you down? And I was like, I don't know. I hope so, but I'm not sure. So when they showed a replay in the stadium, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm down for sure. This is done deal. You know, we going to win, game's over. And when they don't overturn it, I'm devastated. And I'm like, are you serious? And all I could think of was, I should have went down. I should have went down. So it's definitely one of those things that, like I said, I couldn't forget about it even if I wanted to because so many people bring it up.
Yeah.
Hey, your knee was down. Hey, your knee was down. So, yeah.
Well, let me add, your knee was down. Yeah. So, okay. So towards the end then of your playing career, you read somewhere that you said you wanted to travel the world and you actually received, a bachelor's degree in global studies. Is that right?
Yes.
So, however, coaching presented itself and you ended up at Snow. Was that a detour that you saw coming or did it catch you by surprise?
By the time I was done playing, I wanted to do that. So when I had the opportunity, it was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. My wife wasn't super excited because she had heard, you know, how time-consuming coaching is, you know. But at the same time, her being the supportive wife that she was like, I know football is your passion. I believe that you have something to offer these kids, which was always my motivation. She was like, let's give it a try and see. So we moved to Ephraim, and I coached at Snow for 2 years, actually. And it was a blast. It was a great place to get my feet wet in the coaching world. And it was an opportunity where I was like, oh, I like this. I like this. I enjoy this. And I actually think I'm pretty good at it. So it was something that we ran with for a few more years until, you know, life happened. And then we had to make another detour from coaching.
Well, and you come back to BYU, and you've had a lot of different non-coaching jobs. Do you miss coaching?
100%. 100%.
What about it do you miss the most?
I think it's the interaction with the players. And once again, the process, right, of having a kid, learn, grow, apply what you've taught them or what they've learned, and watching them be successful. So for me, it's the process in the relationships and having the opportunity to be of influence to these boys, you know, in a very pivotal and important time in their lives. So that's what it is for me. And obviously, I love the game of football.
Sure.
So.
All right. Let's bring it back full circle as we wrap things up. So at the beginning of the interview, we're talking about your job as the director of recruiting and everything that is involved in that. You having told the story that you did, that when you were mm-hmm. in high school, coming to BYU, you were adamant this was not the place you wanted to be. How ironic is it that now you come full circle to a situation where it is your job to convince others that BYU is the right place for you? Could you imagine? The younger you, if you had told yourself this is where you're going to end up and this is going to be what you're doing, how crazy would that have sounded to you?
I told myself or whoever said it, they were out of their mind, out of their mind. But I think because of my experience, what I have to share in my perspective of BYU is valuable. Because I myself, especially when it comes to kids who aren't familiar with Utah, who aren't familiar with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who aren't familiar with or used to being in an area where, you know, it's predominantly white and all those things. And me being able to tell them that although it may be a difficult transition initially, it's one of the best places that you can be that allows you to achieve all that you're in search of. And there's wonderful people here, just like there's wonderful people anywhere you go. And you can come here and build relationships with great people, have an amazing experience as a student, and play really good football at a really high level. And at the end of the day, if football, if education, if success in general is your goal, there's not many places where you can go and get all those things rolled up in one. You know, there's tons of schools where you can get really good football, but the education is, you know, there's other schools where you can go and get a great education, but the football is, you know, but BYU, you truly can get the best of both worlds. You can have your cake and you can eat it too. So I'm able to share those things with those recruits, but even more importantly, I'm able to share with their parents. Mm-hmm. So many parents, especially moms, have concerns about their sons being here, what their experience will be like, who they're going to date, will they have to be converted to be members of the church to be here? What does it look like when they graduate? So I can speak to all of those things, you know, and it gives me an insight and almost a built-in relationship with those kids and their families when they get here. And they're able to see BYU and Utah for what it truly is and not for what people have told them it is.
Right.
Or what they've assumed it is without having seen it themselves. So.
Well, Brandon, this was fantastic. I really enjoyed this. I hope you enjoyed it, too.
I did.
This was fantastic. Thank you for
cool.
doing this.
No, thanks for having me. It was when Kenny asked me about it, I was kind of like, me? You sure? But no, I appreciate it. It's been cool.
Yeah,
this has
been awesome, and I really do appreciate you taking the time.
Most definitely. Thank you for having me, my man.
You bet. Thanks once again to my guest, Brandon Bradley. My name is Jason Shepherd. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.